heard about partnerships that are currently working and currently functioning and having impact. I'm going to talk about a partnership that's in formation. Okay, it's not yet real. It's a virtual partnership. Perhaps some people might even say like vaporware. It's a little beyond that stage. But by way of background, just to remind everyone that we've been really spectacularly successful in this country by immunizing children. We have the highest record coverage with vaccines that we've ever had and the lowest levels of disease that we've ever had. That brings with it, however, the fact that people no longer fear many of these diseases, and many people may begin to question why we need to continue vaccinating against diphtheria. We haven't had a case of diphtheria in this country for 10 years. What about polio? It's been 20-some years since we had a case of polio. So they focus now not on the risk of disease, but on the risks that are inherent in every vaccine, even though these risks may be very small. So rising concerns about the safety of vaccines, and many of these, if not most of them, are not based in science, are threatening the gains we've made. And the loudest voices and the most visible faces that are addressing immunization are often those who are attacking the safety of vaccines rather than those who support vaccines' benefits. Some recent examples around vaccines and autism include the appearance by the actress Jenny McCarthy on Oprah and then Larry King Live, phone-in interviews on Don Imus, the program on ABC called Eli Stone, which featured a lawyer who successfully represented a woman who thought her child's autism was caused by vaccines, and the recent announcement of the government settlement in the polling case, which because no one is at liberty to provide all the details, is being portrayed in a wide range of ways in the media. From those who say this is not a precedent, it did not admit that vaccine caused autism, it merely conceded the plausibility that vaccines aggravated a pre-existing condition. Well, that's a little bit different from saying, okay, you know, vaccines cause autism, the government has admitted it. So these are problems that we're currently having. And this is not just a US problem, it's a global problem. Our issues with MMR vaccine and autism began actually with an article published in Lancet based on a study in London, which has since been retracted by 11 of the 13 authors on the study. And our concerns in this country about thimerosal have major implications in the developing world, where thimerosal is a necessity because they have to buy vaccine in multi-dose vials, and you have to have a preservative if you do that to prevent contamination of the vaccine. So there are a number of people who think there's a need for independent, credible, science-based advocacy to prominently reflect the continuing broad base of support for immunization among Americans and around the world. And this new organization, Voices for Vaccines, intends to provide voices and faces to meet that need. Our vision is that through knowledge of the real benefits and risks of vaccines, people will embrace vaccines as a way of preventing disease, disability, and death. We consider our mission to be twofold. One, to provide science-based, accessible, and clear information about the benefits and risks of vaccines and vaccine-preventable diseases to the public, health professionals, political leaders, and their organizations. And secondly, to represent the millions of people who support immunization in speaking with one strong voice about the value of immunization, recognizing that vaccines are not perfect and that there are risks associated with every vaccine. In order to establish and maintain our independence, we will neither solicit nor accept funds from companies that manufacture or distribute vaccines or from the federal government. That means that we will be seeking funding from foundations or non-vaccine related industries. And if any of you have any suggestions, please let me know. Because it turns out it's not, people don't just immediately write checks when they hear something that sounds like a good idea. We have currently a steering committee that includes several people whose names you will recognize. Three of the steering committee members were the authors of the previous presentation. We have representation from the Academy of Pediatrics, the Academy of Family Physicians, Meningitis Angels, the Vaccine Education Center, the Emory Vaccine Center, Families Fighting Flu, Parents of Kids with Infectious Diseases, PKIDS, Every Child by Two, Families Fighting Flu, the AMA, again, the Academy of Family Physicians, and the Immunization Action Coalition. We are in process of developing a website, which is at www.voicesforvaccines.org. It should be up in the next week or so. We have a tentative logo, which be interested in your opinion on. I mean, the four is mighty big. But the point is that we're trying to make the point that this is a group that is favoring vaccines, so it's for vaccines. Now, pun may be too subtle. Anyway, if any of you are interested in knowing more about this, I have some flyers. We have sign-up sheets, actually, if you'd like to join. There's no fee for membership. We will accept donations. It operates under the umbrella of the Task Force for Child Survival and Development, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit public charity incorporated in the state of Georgia, so donations are tax deductible. And we look forward to trying to enlist you in your individual capacities as members to be able to fairly state that we represent thousands of people. You may recognize that is an organization called the National Vaccine Information Center that claims to speak for, 30,000 people or something like that. We'd like to be able to surpass that number because more people support immunizations than do not, and we would like to try to organize a voice for those people. Thank you very much.
Now is your opportunity if you have any questions from the audience for our speakers. Yes, would you come to the microphone, please, so we can actually record these?
Hi, my name's Alicia. I work with a local health department in Wisconsin. This question is for Carol. Maybe I'm wrong. Who had the MA program? It was Carol, okay. Did you just teach techniques, or did you also educate the MAs on schedules? Because we have a problem working with physicians' offices. They're very good at giving the shot, but there's some lack of education and understanding when to give a shot.
In Orange County, we have a vaccine registry, and so the schedule's there. So we highlight the registry, encourage them to get involved if they aren't in an office that already is involved in the registry. We show them the schedules, but we don't emphasize that information because they are medical assistants and can't work independently. We also teach vaccine storage and handling as well as administration.
But the Wisconsin Immunization Registry can mm-hmm. provide that information.
It does, but there's still some issues with it, so. All right, and then Amy, that website that you gave, info@,
oh, actually, that's an email address, so you can email me, but our website, or it's info@ecbt.org.
At EC?
Every child by two, ECBT. And then our website is www.ecbt.org.
Okay, thanks.
Good.
Kelly Zachridge with the Indiana Immunization Coalition. First of all, I want to applaud Dr. Hinman and what he's doing for Voices for Vaccines because I think it is so needed. We, in our community, actually put together a program where we brought grandchildren and grandparents together and videotaped the grandparents actually talking to the grandchildren about their memories of disease. It was a great experience. My question.
Would you be willing to share that?
Oh, yes, we're definitely willing to share. It was actually, we did it at our local Children's Science Museum, and if they brought their grandparents for the day, they got in free, and we did a whole day of just education for immunization. So it was a great experience for us. But Amy, I just learned about some new legislation. I kind of heard tentatively that this was going to happen, and I just brought it up right before this meeting. H.R. 4702, I believe, that Henry Waxman is supporting in regards to the delegation of authority is a huge issue in the state of Indiana, and this is actually including or amending the original Vaccines for Children program issue in regards to including public health clinics. Are you supporting this, or are you doing anything in regards to this legislative piece?
Not that it's been introduced this year.
I didn't know that had been reintroduced. I would support it, absolutely. But I know there's a lot of discussion about whether or not folks, well, I don't know that we would support it, absolutely. There's a lot of question about whether to open up VFC legislation. I do know that Henry Waxman already made a declaration that the original intent of the language was so that health departments could designate authority. And I know that Dr. Gerberding has been supporting that as well, so I really don't know why they would move forward with the legislation necessarily. There's just worries that folks would worry that maybe, I don't know why anybody wouldn't support VFC. It's sort of like apples and mama.
I know it's you know occurring in about a half the states in regards to the delegation of authority. Our state, it's fairly new, and when we went around and actually looked at where the FQHCs, we only have 11 in our state. Of course, we have more RHCs, and they are cooperative, but the issue with liability still lies with the FQHCs, and they're not really signing up. And then we have the issue of, you know, counties, you know, far away, and they're not, and you know, if you want to contract with somebody that's two counties away right. to help you with this delegation of authority, it's not happening.
So the FQHCs I,
in
are
my opinion, and this would make it so much easier just to really designate those public health clinics because we're the ones that are actually doing it in the first place. Yeah. So I'm very supportive of this, and I would really like to, I'm hoping that others would be supportive of this legislation as well.
Just to follow up on the issue, there is concern about opening up VFC because there are folks who would not support continuation of VFC in its present format, in part because it's viewed as an unfunded mandate. Or, you know, it is an entitlement. And the folks in the Office of Management and Budget don't like sudden increases in the federal budget that they can't control. And so there will be opposition. The question is how large to anything that could be viewed as expansion of VFC. And if you open up a piece of legislation, any part of it can be amended. So the you know, it's as they say about sausages and legislation, you don't want to watch them being made. And there's also a view, when I used to work in the state government, it was don't ever introduce something into the legislature until you're sure how it's going to come out. And I think there, on the National Vaccine Advisory Committee Vaccine Finance Work Group, we were talking about this yesterday in point of fact, and there's a lot of support for the notion of expanding, of delegating authority. And for those of you who don't know the issue is that underinsured children can receive VFC vaccine. They're eligible for vaccines for which their insurance doesn't cover it, but only if they're served in federally qualified health centers or rural health centers. And there are only about 4,500 of these around the country, whereas there are more than 45,000 VFC providers. So the question of access is a real one. And one approach that has been taken successfully in several states has been for the federally qualified health centers to delegate authority to the local health departments as being part of the FQHC. A question has arisen at one level about whether this extends liability of the federally qualified health centers if something should happen. I've heard from some legal folks that this is not a real issue, but apparently it's enough of an issue that it is impeding progress in a number of places. So the idea is a wonderful one. I think the question is whether the mechanism of legislation is better than actually just trying to continue to push it at a programmatic level.
Also, there's also not complete support over just letting health departments, folks like the Academy of Pediatrics want it if it's providers as well, because it's the question of the medical home being broken up again.
I think it would be great to actually, I know you're so good at sending out your action alerts, to actually put some information together in regards to this legislation.
Sure, I'll do that.
I did just send it out to all of our memberships so that they were aware of this.
Okay, I'll do that. Sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. It's HR 4702.
It must be part of another bill, though.
Thank you, Barb.
I didn't know that. I'll look it up. I'll send an alert out to everyone. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good morning. I'm a little nervous, but I'm a registered nurse from St. Croix, Virgin Islands.
We're jealous.
They say there's no stupid question, but I'm a daughter of a polio survivor, and I've been a registered nurse since 1973. My background's emergency room, dialysis, and now immunization since 2002. What my question is, and I guess maybe it sounds stupid, is why we subsidize vaccines for other countries and we can't subsidize ourselves.
Well, I'll answer that.
That is not at all a stupid question. And if you were in the plenary session this morning and heard David Fleming talk, he was talking about how we should be learning from developing countries and from the rest of the world about approaches to financing vaccines. And the fact is that in a lot of ways, it's easier to appropriate funds to give to a developing country for vaccines than it is to try to fix the healthcare system in the United States. We are in a better position now than we've ever been before with respect to financing immunizations in this country. The Vaccines for Children program has been an extraordinary success. It provides nearly half of the vaccines that are used in children, and it provides the vaccines in the medical home where they ought to be given. This is wonderful. Private insurance for those who have it, which is, you know, about half the kids have private insurance, generally speaking, is covering immunizations pretty well. There may be a lag time between when a new vaccine is introduced and when it's covered, and there may be issues with the level of reimbursement, but by and large, coverage is pretty good. The real problem is for the kids who are underinsured, whose parents have some insurance, but it doesn't cover all vaccines, or it may have high copays. VFC will help the kids who are underinsured, that is, for when their parents have insurance, but it covers nothing of certain vaccines, and there are policies like that. The problem is where you can get them, and as we were just saying, the number of sites is limited. There are some of us, and I am in a distinct minority, who believe that the government should provide all vaccines for all people. As I say, I'm in the minority on this position, but there is, I think, a growing sense on many sides of the political spectrum, perhaps not all sides, that there ought not to be any financial barriers to the receipt of vaccines. And the question is how to try to attain that status.
Do they want an outbreak?
Well,
we had an outbreak of 22 cases of pertussis on St. Croix for the month of March. Actually, I'm proud to say that as the head nurse of the immunization program in St. Croix, we do not charge any child under the age of 19, whether they have insurance or not.
Okay, good for
you
guys.
I'm very proud of that.
It would be wonderful if it was like that in the rest of the country.
Now, my another issue is we had an in-service. We have a mandatory in-service every third Friday in our clinic for all nursing staff. And one of the in-services was regarding Medicare reimbursement for elders. And I was really surprised that tetanus diphtheria is not even included in that. There's no reimbursement for Medicare for tetanus diphtheria. However, if you're in a high risk group, you can get a free hepatitis B series with Medicare.
That's correct. Medicare was designed as a treatment program. The original legislation specifically barred Medicare funds from being used for any preventive service. The first preventive service that was authorized for reimbursement under Medicare more than 20 years ago now, or about 20 years ago now, was pneumococcal polysaccharide vaccine. Then about 15 years ago, influenza vaccine was added, as was hepatitis B vaccine for high-risk individuals. But those are specific named exemptions, and TD has not been added.
It's unbelievable.
The other problem is that all other vaccines that are now being recommended.
And then shingles?
Zostervax, that is now considered a part of Medicare Part D, and which means you have to buy the supplemental insurance that covers prescription drugs. And then there are problems with the fact that that works with pharmacies. It was designed to work with pharmacies. And pharmacies are not accustomed, well, there are issues with getting reimbursement for the charge of administration of the vaccine if it's given in a physician's office. And the way prescription drugs work, typically the patient has to go to the drugstore, get the drug, and if it has to be given by a physician, then they'd have to carry the vaccine back to the physician's office to get it. There is some movement, not enough, I don't think, but some movement to include all recommended vaccines as Part B benefits, which would put them in with pneumococcal and influenza vaccine. That has not yet happened.
Thank you for your time.
LJ wants me to say Waxman has a bill on that issue. And I know that the Immunization Congress out of AMA, they're looking at really vamping up the adult and the adolescent programs. There's even talk about a vaccines for adult program. And I know that Gerberding, when she testified just last week, was asked by, I can't remember who asked her the question, I don't think it was Waxman, whether or not, it was Roybal Allard, I believe, whether or not she supported a vaccines for adult program. She waffled on it a little bit, but she did definitely support a great deal of education and media awareness about adult vaccines, but not necessarily a program. But there is a lot of talk about it.
Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And would everyone please thank our panel here who has been very well-versed.